condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, we're up Sergeant Jack, something else. We have Ricky on the board. SP futures up 47. NASDAQ futures up 206. Dow futures up 27. This is after a very crummy day yesterday. And we had, yesterday we were down 84 in the S&P and 363 in the NASDAQ. And a big movement here is in crypto. Yesterday, Bitcoin kept sliding all day long, and then last night, it almost hit 60,000, and then had the huge bounce. I don't know if the Fed's buying or somebody's buying. It's up 2,700 now to 66,261. We don't know if that's temporary or the bottom or what it is, but maybe Carl knows. Is Carl with us?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, yeah, Carl, he'll be with us in a while. Kevin, did you buy some Bitcoin last night?
No.
And why not? It was the bottom, they say.
Well, if it was the bottom, that's great.
Well, there you go.
I don't like other people's bottoms.
Well, some maybe, you know. Just saying. Anyway, it was really quite the day yesterday. I mean, crash helmets ran. You have some individual stocks were getting clobbered. Stocks that were you thought were pretty sacred, stuff like Microsoft and places like that were just down like every day. Well, your international consulting firms, Kevin, are just getting clobbered. I have no idea where this is coming from, because not only is the market seeming to be going down, but every day it's a different sector people are picking on, and another sector seems to be okay, and then the next day that sector is no good. It's going down in kind of chunks by area. It's weird. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, but I don't know what the story is with this Bitcoin. But I did dig out, you know. Carl sent some stuff out about now it costs what, $80,000 in electricity to mine a Bitcoin or something?
Yeah,
if you read ridiculous. That, that's kind of a lot.
Yeah, I did look at that, and it is a lot. So it's uneconomical to increase the supply at this point. But there are other activities that go into every transaction. So there's this whole proof of, I think they call it proof of ownership, not proof of work at this point, but. You know, everybody who participates in the ledger, and in Bitcoin, that's pretty much everybody. All of those Bitcoin ledgers have to be updated. That's part of the security feature of it, is that it's all distributed. So each one of those has to go through a proof of work process, which means it takes a while for transactions to propagate. But that's a whole lot of processing power that goes into that.
How come you listen to a cerebral dude like yourself talk about the alleged cerebral qualities of Bitcoin? You know, everybody's involved, none of this bad shit can happen, blah blah blah, and yet at the other end of the day it seems like a lot of bad shit can happen in here. I mean, somehow or another,
you think you can make something foolproof?
Well, here's where I'm
you can make it pretty darn secure, but can you make it foolproof? I don't think so.
Well, I mean, it's my brother Dan. I might have mentioned this yesterday.
Twice.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, it is stunning. The reason why I bring it back up, not because I have nothing else to talk about, but I kick up AI here, and I go, "How many bitcoins have been mined?" And as of early 2026, approximately 19.9 million to 19.96 million have been mined. So, okay, first thing that should pop into the noodle of Stocks and Jacks listeners is, okay, wait a minute. Every $1,000 drop or rise in this thing, what's 19.9 million type of time 1,000? $20 billion is changing, and wealth is changing. Well, going or coming, right? That's a lot, even especially when it's been down. It's down 60 from its high, but then again, it got to its high. But here's the part that's weird, Kevin. You can't. I don't see how you can have it both ways. It is so secure that it is estimated that 3 to 4 million of the mined bitcoins are permanently lost, effectively reducing the circulating supply. How the hell can you do that?
Say that again?
It says 3 to 4 million of all the coins mined are permanently lost. It's 20%. If everything is so secure, how come nothing's so secure?
Well, that's actually part of the security feature. When you talk about, forgot the password, that the transactions, movements themselves, that's how blockchain works. And I don't want to get too much in the weeds for this because I'm only interested in blockchain as a supply chain related
thing. I understand.
I don't really give a poop about it for cryptocurrencies, because as you talk about this stuff and then you want to go ask me again why I didn't buy any. So we can do that, but ultimately, if you're going to be the owner of some of coins, whether it's full coins, partial coins, doesn't matter. If you're going to be the owner, that's going to land in your personal cryptocurrency wallet, your personal Bitcoin wallet. That, you know, everything's traceable right up until it gets to the wallet. And then it's really, ownership of the wallet can be muddled. It can be very obvious if it says Tom Howell at PTI Securities. Well, we pretty much know who the owner of the wallet is. But if it's, love daddy from Chicago, like you are, nobody's going to know. And that's, that's where it falls out. That's where the anonymity goes away. But it's up to you to remember your username and password for that, because you don't want anybody else to have it. You don't want anybody else to crack into your Bitcoin wallet and fix it. So that's why it gets to be important. Now, if you're on an exchange, you can always go in there and they'll manage your password for you, password access to the exchange. So there are ways around that, but that's how it works. That is what what always makes it difficult too. That landing in the Bitcoin wallet is what makes it difficult. So, for example, what was it, about 4 years ago or so, that they had the Colonial Pipeline hack, and they wound up paying the ransom, and the feds wound up getting almost all of it back because you were able to follow the transaction all the way to the end, to the Bitcoin wallet, and they were able to get in and have it frozen before whoever owned it could liquidate everything and turn it into dollars, because it isn't that easy to just turn around and say, okay, I want dollars for all this stuff. There's only so many trips a day you can make to the ATM, to the Bitcoin ATM, to withdraw dollars.
As you, I've never owned one of them. Okay, so in that regard, I suppose I don't really care, but the phenomenon of essentially an artificial stock, for lack of a better term, has been propagated on this earth, and it gets to the point where there might have been as much as $3 trillion in there. Well, that affects other stuff that other people have, and that's Stocks and Jacks. We're talking about stocks. Does it affect stocks? Well, where's the leverage? Does it affect people? If there's no leverage, there's no. I think there's very little of a problem, Kevin, if everybody just bought in. Well, now, obviously, Coinbase, the firm, lends people money to buy Bitcoin of some kind. Well, that's a problem. But you never really know where the leverage is. I mean, I don't know, to be blunt, the Bitcoin machines in the black communities, is there $50, $2 million? Is this where people have their equity because they don't trust a bank? I mean, I don't know. Do they have a securities account? Probably not. Is it MicroStrategies that decides they're not going to be a company really anymore and they're going to buy? Who are they borrowing the money from? Is it my bank? Is it your bank? I mean, I don't. There's always unintended consequences to this. And, you know, essentially it's my job, and I think some of the, you know, the discussion on the show is, where's the problem? I mean, $3 trillion, even in today's world, if it were to disappear, there's a few people with a nick out of their behind, right? Now, the question is, who are the people, and does it start to go downhill? Is the person who, you know, somebody might have bought 5 Bitcoins 20 years ago and said, okay, we got enough money, we got enough wealth to remodel a house, okay? And they might borrow $200,000 to remodel a house. If the Bitcoin's gone, now all of a sudden, what do they have to? They have to puke out their IRA, which is other stock, to pay for the remodel. I mean, you talk about this all the time in class. Where is it all at? You know, we created something out of nothing, and if it's just gone, is it just going to be gone, or is other stuff going to come with it? I mean, I've seen it happen for 45 years in the business, that if a stock goes from 100 to 200 and back to 100, everybody would think, what's the problem? But there is a problem. Because some poor guy bought it at 200, maybe borrowed money to buy it, and on the way down, somebody maybe bought the dip and borrowed money to do that, and somehow or another, it ends up being a bigger fiasco than you would think it would be. And that's my concern here. If this thing all of a sudden is 20,000 or 10,000, what devil am I chasing here is the question. And then again, you and I would never have it and never use it. So I guess in that regard, we don't care. But if all of a sudden the other stock we do have is being puked out by people because of the Bitcoin, then we do care, right?
Well, yeah. And, you know, right, for my part, I own a couple $100 worth just because I wanted to see what it was about. So
how do you know it's not 5,000 now?
Well, it's because I get a regular report of the value.
Well, you didn't do the vending machine thing? You did a...
No.
Okay.
So, yeah, for me, it's just a curiosity. It cost me a few $100 just to see.
Yeah, well, that's cool. And I know you're the kind of guy, I'll buy $100 for the next shot of the high-end booze just to see. I don't, you know.
Oh, but I just along those lines, yeah, I'm a sucker for all the, you know, as seen on TV stuff, too. Does it cost me $19.99 to find out if it works? Sure, do it.
So what
my latest on that one, by the way, is I saw an ad for a handheld leaf blower. In other words, it's, you know, it's only got a you know, it has a hyper engine and then, you know, the spout for it where it blows the air out is only about 6 or 8 inches long. So I was looking at that, you know, this commercial comes on TV, and the last thing they said, and you can use it to blow snow off your car. And I said, oh, buy that.
Well, what if you get like an 8-year-old and he's misbehaving? Can you turn it on him and flip him down?
I don't have an 8-year-old, so I have not pondered that question.
what if it's just some guy you don't like?
I've had an 8-year-old in a long time.
Yeah, well, what do you think about Sunday, Super Bowl? A lot of money for the commercials.
I am probably the worst to ask about all of that peripheral crap because I pay very little attention to the commercials. You know, it's always a chance for me to do something, to look down at my computer, whatever it is. I doubt that I will pay any attention to the halftime show. I care about the game. I would favor Seattle, but not by a lot. And that's about what I think about it. And it takes way too long. I'll make a nice pot roast that will simmer throughout the day. I'll watch the Irish women play at Virginia at 4 o'clock. So that'll be a nice pregame entree. They won, by the way, last night. They beat a really good Virginia Tech team, so they needed that win badly, and they did. That's kind of what my Sunday is going to look like. I'll probably get grading done for assignments because I have to put in midterm grades next week. So I'll probably get some of that done during while all that pregame nonsense is on that I don't care about. And that's, you know, I'm not the hyper consumer of all things, all things Super Bowl. I'm just not.
Well, I'm surely not either. I like to watch the differences in the The commercials, not in what they are. I mean, since GoDaddy doesn't do them anymore. Some that are, you know, since I was chair of the marketing committee for a while, I've finally learned the difference between, like what there's marketing and there's PR, right? And I always like to look at the firms that spend that kind of money, and it's really nothing you can go out and buy today, even if you wanted to. Like, what I'm talking about is, say it's GoDaddy, for instance, or versus Pepsi. I don't even know if Pepsi's advertising this year, but Pepsi can actually chart, I mean, easily. Well, not maybe not so easily, but I know they can do it. They would always like to see that they got a bulge in sales versus Coke or other people for the next, like, 10 days. And how much, the first day it was something, second day it was a little less, and how it would decrease. And finally, maybe they had a little bit that stayed on there. But they could basically say how much they sold and did the increase in sales over the next week or two pay for the commercials. So that's what I would consider to be pure marketing, where GoDaddy, for instance, for those that don't know, they web host and everything else. I mean, you're not going to go out and buy a firm and get a website just because you saw the commercial. So it's something in the back of your head that someday, somewhere, when you say, well, we could use GoDaddy, or we could use, you know, Kevin and Carl. Oh, well, let's use GoDaddy. I saw their commercial. It's the difference in timing and the difference in what they're trying to do to you mentally, I find very interesting. So I watch that a little bit. It's just kind of a curiosity because I used to do that. Because for instance, if you see some drug commercial, well, if you don't have the disease, you're not going to go out and buy the drug, right? So,
remember the catchy name.
Right. But you're also talking about what percentage of the people, what is the demographic they're looking for? I mean, if I was going to look at, say we're going to advertise, PTI does great work in IRAs or something, for people, dump your 401k, well, not dump, you retire, roll your 401k into an IRA at PTI. Okay, well, a lot of people do that, by the way. And by the way, I would recommend maybe somebody listening should do that. But the point is, we're talking about people who just retired. Okay, so just or about to. So what percentage of the people listening am I aiming at with that commercial? I mean, you might catch a speculator just likes the commercial, maybe. By and large, you're talking about what? 6, 7, 8% of the people listening? So you're already down to that, right? And then the question is, how many of these people even have a 401k? Probably mostly everybody. I mean, how many people want to keep it there because the place is giving them, you know, big interest or whatever? When you start to narrow it down, you're out of the, you know, 20 million people or 100 million people that watch the Super Bowl, if only the people you're talking to are 5 million and you think your success rate is going to be 1%, you know, what are you down to? And 1% would be huge, by the way. So you're talking about, you might, even if you landed...
That's the response rate. That doesn't mean you're going to close the deal.
Yeah, even if you landed 500 clients, is it worth $26 million? But these are the kind of calculations that I'm sort of interested in, Kevin. And some people seem to do them very well, and some, you wonder, they just want to see their name out there. I find that part interesting, whether the commercial itself... Well, I do have a soft spot for always the Clydesdale Colts, the young Clydesdales. What can I say?
No, that's from hanging with...
Hanging around with Audrey.
Audrey, yes.
Yeah, Miss Horse Girl. But anywho, so what do you think's going on in the sports world? The Bulls, I guess, lost by 16 again last night. They're having a practice today to introduce each other. That's kind of interesting.
Don't care. Do you care?
I care about the psychology of it a little bit, because one thing I do find interesting, Kevin, is when you talk to people about it, there's like three sets of people. One are the people who think they're armchair general managers, and you know, an armchair quarterbacks or whatever. Then there's people who you got a tank, you got to get like the best guy, okay. Or look at the money we saved. Well, who's we? You know, that type of thing. And then you'll find somebody who might actually have bought season tickets and go, okay, what is the value of the rest of the year's tickets in terms of entertainment? Well, it sucks.
What was the value? You know, I mean, seriously. We've been talking for weeks about, you know, using Angelica's All They Do Is Lose. Okay, all they do is lose. They're just going to continue to lose. That's why I said I don't care. They were playing like crap before, which is a shame because they started out hot and playing a really good, enjoyable style of basketball, only to just, for I don't know what reason, stop doing it. So, like I said, why should I care what they do? If they suck, they can, you know, okay, maybe they'll suck a little more. So what?
Well, they're all, if you, again, I get down to the percentages a little bit, and then we'll get off this topic, but the, you got 30 teams, right? So that means the best team is going to win, what, 4 to 5 times a century? So I'm saying somewhere between basketball and some kind of affinity for the people on the team sort of has to be the product. I mean, if winning is the product, only 5 teams would have anybody in the stands, and the rest of them would be empty. Right? So, I mean, there's somewhere in the middle, the product has to become sort of basketball. And when you get, for instance, one of the guys on the team, I actually kind of like watching him. He's from Chicago, I believe, went to Illinois, and now he's been on the Bulls for several years, Guy Odesumo. He seems to get a little better every year, seems like a good kid. All of a sudden, he's gone. And you could have been an Odesumo fan. I mean, when I was real young, the Cubs sucked, but I was an Ernie Banks fan. I'd go out there anytime I could, if my uncle took me or whatever, I'd go because I wanted to watch Ernie Banks. Same way, you know, with Al Kaline and other people in some of these places. You just didn't say we're going to save $50 and toss Ernie Banks the next year and still have a suck team. I mean, there's some camaraderie you make with the players. I mean, the Bulls never, quote, won when I was young, but I couldn't wait to watch Jerry Sloan and Norm Van Leer and Chet Walker. I mean, those were my guys.
The point there is that they were good. They didn't win the championship,
right,
but they were good.
But I'm saying these are all variables is all I'm talking about.
And specifically to Odesumo, his contract's up this summer, so, or at the end of the season. So maybe they'll bring him back. Maybe they'll, you know, try and make a move to bring him back. That'd be cool if they did. But, you know, do you suppose a lot of people went out to United Center just to see Nikola Vucevic?
I don't know. I mean, he's a good player.
He's a solid player. Doubt a lot of people did. Maybe some people went out to see Kobe White, but I doubt it because he's been injured most of the last 2 years. So, you know, I don't know about that. So what I'm saying is, hey, they're not good. Okay, they dumped a bunch of guys, tried to accumulate draft capital. Great, fine. Don't care. If you want to get good, let me know. I'll come watch when you get good. But I just don't care for right now.
Well, how do you break out of?
I have a hard time working up enough energy to care about it.
Okay, it's a huge chunk of money that's flying around. And again, I guess my next question is on the Bitcoin stuff that we don't necessarily care much. But what if Bitcoin drops to, you know, $10,000 and somehow the market drops 25%. What does that do to NBA salaries? I think all this stuff's connected, Kevin. I know sometimes...
I get that, and you keep bringing up the salaries. First of all, that's not a normal salary market. So, you know, so what does it do to NBA salaries? Don't know. Again, have a hard time caring. If they crash, they crash. If they don't crash and people are stuck with losses, well, way to be stupid. I would care a whole lot more about what it does to factory workers' salaries. And, you know, that makes much more of a difference to me.
Well, that's kind of where I was trying to lead this, Kevin. Do you think the connection between, what is the connection and for factory workers and, you know, I guess regular people, which I put us in, between that and the incredible amount of wealth that, you know, Bitcoin at $100,000 or, you know, Microsoft at $500 or these stocks that were this high, that brings people, and all of a sudden, is that gone? It gave us the 5% that seemed to own everything, or 10%. If it scrubs away some of that from that group, how much does that affect the factory worker? I'm not so sure it does, because I don't know if Treasury did so well when it went up. Do you? It's kind of affected a little, but in other words, it's become so selective where this super wealth is. If it drops some, does it really affect you and me? It affects some of my clients, obviously, but it's kind of a unique phenomenon.
Yeah, that's why I like hearing Kevin Warsh say, you know, we got to get back to, got to get away from running the Fed for Wall Street. Whether he actually does it or not, you know, that's another issue, but at least we're starting off with the right words.
Well, the last guy tried to do the same thing, and it was all well and good until the market went down, right?
Agreed.
You know, and I don't know, but so anyway, well, it'll be interesting, Kevin. I know that it's I have a lot of stocks, the individual stocks that we watch for people, and some of them, man, they're just going straight down. Thank God we got protection. But there's a lot of stocks that they're taking really quite a hit. And we've got Amazon this morning. They're down another 8. You know, we're talking about stocks 8, 9, 10% move. People seem like immune to that, Kevin. You know, and this is not a shout out to Obama at all, but there were 2 or 3 years during his administration. I don't think we had a 1% move in the market for like 600 trading days or five or something. The difference between, I'm not saying that was better or worse, but the difference is just dramatic. In terms of, you know, we have 1-2% moves sometimes in a couple hours now. And some of it's market fabric, but it clearly is different. I'm not saying it's worse. I'm not saying anything. But, the VIX is, yesterday was 22. That is incredible high. The price of insurance for the market, it's like buying insurance on a Corvette, for God's sake. I mean, it says something. I don't know what it says, but there's definitely a message there. I wish I could figure it out. But, I mean, there's an amazing amount of instability. I don't know if it's risk. I don't know if it's bad policy. I don't know if it's changed the good new policy. I have no idea what it is, but it's there. I mean, it's right in front of you.
Keep telling you that we have had a profound economic policy shift, and we'll see what happens with it. You know, right now it's make your popcorn, sit back, and watch, because you ain't going to do anything about it.
Well, so what would, are you a gold bug? Are you hanging on to your what are the things they used to sell from South Africa?
The brand?
No, it was the 1 ounce gold thing. Oh God, it's on the tip of my tongue. Krugerrand.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Oh, all right. You got like a drawer full of those?
Yeah. They're in the lower drawer of the dresser in my room. But don't anybody come and break in and steal them.
Hey, we didn't have a chance. Maybe you know this. We didn't have a chance to talk to Lou yesterday about what is the status of that lawsuit with the guy Duke to Miami? Is that?
It was settled.
Okay. So where's he playing?
Miami.
And did he end up giving Duke money? You know, or that's right.
They did not. They did not go public with the results of it, but they reached a settlement that apparently both sides could live with.
What do you think the?
I think that lawsuit was as much as anything. It was much like George Halas suing George Allen back in the day. And for those not old enough to remember that, George Allen was under contract to the Bears as an assistant, and the Rams hired him. George Halas sued and said, "You can't just walk away from your contract." He wanted to protect his contract. And so he sued George Allen. He won, and then he said, "Okay, now let's talk. Do you want to go take the job?" He let him go take the job. Eventually, he just wanted to protect the idea that he had a contract and that people have to live up to the contract. So I think as much as anything, that's what Duke was doing, is they're trying to set some precedent there.
Well, I think the precedent there is that there was a contract. I mean, for those that don't remember on the George Allen situation, a lot of your assistant coaches have a contract. I mean, right, Kevin? But the gentleman's agreement always has been, if it's a promotion, we let you go. if not, I'm not so sure that the Bears would let their offensive coordinator go to be the offensive coordinator at Green Bay, even now.
Well, no, they don't let, but the gentleman's agreement doesn't include lateral moves.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And so, but George Halas was the first guy who was enough of a whatever to say, oh, no, you can't even go up and be a head coach. Because he was hired as a head coach, right?
Yeah.
So, and Halas was the first one to essentially pierce the gentleman's agreement because, you know, who knows if Halas was even a gentleman.
I didn't even know what the gentleman's agreement was in those days.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was unusual.
Yeah, there was also, you know, the matter of protocol. Did they come and ask permission to
I don't know.
With them? So that may have been a factor as well.
Well, there were how many teams were at the time? Got to be at least probably half of now, or maybe not even half. A little more of a closed club, eh? What do you say we go to a quick break here, Kevin, because stuff is moving. We'll be right back. SP Futures up 33.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do is I'm going to shut down and I'm going to jump in the car. So I'll be offline for a minute and then I'll be back.
All right. Well, by the time we get done with break, you should be good. Okay. NASDAQ Futures up 137. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it. You could junk it. Or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-639-8620. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It'll be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car. And as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-639-8620. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-639-8620. That's 1-800-639-8620.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, Opex Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tamar Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 34. NASDAQ Futures up 145. Except for being down last night. We got a big spin, I don't know, maybe somewhere between like 7 or 8 o'clock and last time when I checked at like midnight. We get the pre-market up here. We're near up. We have the DAX up 156.6. Says here the European stocks opened lower, but they're not lower now. FTSE up 20.2%. CAC up 8, call that flat. So they're up, but not that much. We're in Asia. Nikkei up 435.8%. The Hang Seng down 325, 1.2. Shanghai down 10.2. So kind of a mixed bag over there. Bonds unchanged 4.20. 10-year has been really steady. This whole market kind of juxtaposition, but the 10-year has been really pretty close. Same thing with the Bund, 2.83, down 1 basis point. Oil down 26 cents, 63.03. It's been locked in at the 63 number now for quite a while. Brent up down 19 cents, 67.32. Natural gas up 11 cents, 3.62, so down from the spike high. Gold up $8, 48.97. It was down yesterday pretty heavy. Silver down 3.20, trading 73.42. Again, a lot lower than the 112 a couple of weeks ago. We have a foreign exchange. This has been volatile, not just with the dollar, but between the euro and the pound. Right now, the dollar is at 117, or the euro is 117.9, so say 118. So that's pretty high. Even though the dollar has been a little stronger this week, it got clobbered last week. British pound, 135.9. The yen, 157. Yen steadies before polls. Apparently, they're going to the poll. They're going to elect people there in Japan. Crypto, and here's been the action. Bitcoin's up 26.65, 66.189, but a mere 6 hours ago, it was under 60,000, which is, you know, really, really low. Ethereum has actually made a bounce here a little bit. It's 1,917. And just as a review, yesterday S&P was down 84, NASDAQ down 363. So we're coming back some, but we're not even halfway back. So What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 6:40 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 32 degrees right now with a high of 37. Breezy, a snow shower this afternoon, and there can be freezing drizzle as well. So expect a slippery morning commute, especially if you're tuning in from the northwest Indiana area. Tonight will be breezy and colder with a low of 12 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 62 degrees right now with a high of 81. Very warm with sunshine and a few clouds. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 54 degrees. Let's talk traffic real quick. There's an accident reported southbound on Den Ryan at 47th Street, exit 56B. Causing some mild to heavy traffic southbound on Den Ryan. There's also some congestion northbound on Stevenson. Heavy traffic on exit ramp 292. Mild traffic came out on Eisenhower. And lastly, Kennedy and Edens are looking clear as day. Real quick sports. NFC won Pro Bowl game 66-52 this Tuesday. And this Sunday, we got the Super Bowl, Seahawks versus Patriots at 5:30 p.m. Lastly, NBA, the Bulls won a 3-loss streak yesterday when they lost to Raptors 123-107 with 33 points by Brandon Ingram. Lastly, the Suns lose to Warriors 101-97. The Suns are now 6-4 and number 7 on Western Conference. Back over to you guys.
The interesting, we had Amazon earnings last night. It's down $18, trading 204. It did duck under 200 briefly. Somebody's, you know, we have Micron is bouncing back up $14, 396. Caterpillar, which has been pretty strong, it's up $9 again today. It's 688. So, like I said, it's been within the individual areas, and the transportation average has been fairly strong this week as well. So, it's not everything down. It's one day a big chunk of areas is down, and other areas is up, and it kind of flips back the other day. But the general trend this week. Let me see how far we are off our highs on our S&P. Well, I'll look at the spider. The spider is, we tapped out, where are we? We've been kind of bouncing along in this area. We tapped out, at the record was, 695. We're only at 681. So even though it looks like all hell's breaking loose, it really sort of isn't in the S&P 500. Now the Qs, on the other hand, are going to show a little bit of a deeper dive here as soon as I can get the chart up. There we go. These guys have been a little more volatile because the bigger stacks are in there. Now, they tapped out here at, well, it wasn't quite a record. We were 631 on the 27th of January, which was, you know, last week. And now we're in a 601. So we're down 5%. So it's reasonable, but it's not horrible. I mean, last year, the low in March, or make that April 7th, was, you know, 450 or 420. So we're still a ways up from that, like a long way. So it's not like it looks bad in some stocks if you're in the wrong stocks, but market-wise, this is really not much of a sell-off. So we have Kevin back?
Yeah, you do.
It is weird, Kevin, because you can be in some stocks where you'd swear the sky's falling on you, yet the market average is rolling down a little bit. You know, so it really is an interesting game.
So is there an identifiable shift away from some and into others?
Yeah, somehow or another, I don't know what, the oracles of the world are absolutely getting decimated. Micron kind of continues to go up. The international consulting firms, the OMCs, the ACNs, those kinds of places, because we have a lot of that we manage for people, they've been getting obliterated. But even IBM, which has been a big horse, has been struggling. And yet other areas, transportation average is strong. It's one day, but somehow or another, you'll see the Microsoft, Oracle group down, or an Adobe, and then some other three in sort of a business where you would know the difference of the business, but most people would just say they're all high tech. Half of the high tech are up, and the other half of the high tech are down, and they flip the other day. It's like they're moving, like in not even like pairs, but in little groups up and down. And I'm not so sure anybody knows why, other than they're moving that way.
Hmm.
And so, I mean,
if we really are and truly are seeing a shift towards more manufacturing in the U.S., and again, I keep saying this, a 1 month observation is not a trend, but it's still a good thing. But if there really is, where's that money going to go? Where's that investment? You know, who's going to draw investment? You mentioned transportation. Who else?
Well, I mean, first of all, there's no manufacturers really left in the Dow Industrials, right? I mean, you got Caterpillar, you got Boeing, but you also have, you know, well, you got Honeywell. So, I mean, it's not like there's none, but, you know, you can't just look at the industrials and say that's your, I would think you probably want to go to the industrial piece of the S&P, which I probably should get up here, but I don't know that. I'll check it out on the break, but there is an industrial piece of the, is it the XXL something? My brother, because we actually just put some people in it. They feel exactly the way you do, Kevin. So there is a...
Yeah. Well, and so you have that. Who provides services? You know, who are the... We've been in a trucking, especially, but a shipping recession for quite a few years. I wonder if that's starting to emerge, and I could probably discover that from some of the literature that I have, you know, some of the supply chain stuff that I get across my inbox regularly. So you may be dealing with some of that. I don't know who else, maybe a lot of it's finding its way to some of the smaller companies that Dan Janinas used to feature on here, where he said, really good management team, really efficient operation. Those are the ones that are going to, get the most early benefit out of any reshoring. And because they're prepared, they're ready, nimble enough and able enough to make some moves to ramp up their production. So I would be looking at some of those as well, I suppose. I'm just starting to think of, if I'm a company strategist in at this point in time, and if I'm really a believer in the increase in manufacturing really starting to trend, then I suppose, what would I be looking at becomes your question.
Well, I mean,
what would I be looking to do with my company? And the companies that are looking to do that would be the ones where I'd want investment.
And that's what we haven't really talked about it for like the time, Kevin, on the show. But from time to time, it kind of squeezes out a little bit. And the market has become so concentrated. And some of these companies, even if you identify what you're talking about, which I think, by the way, is the right thing to do, which is the same thing Luz was talking about 2-3 weeks ago regarding, as we increase money into defense spending, who's doing it? Are these mom-and-pop places? It's a denigrating term, but are they not traded places? Because a lot of them aren't traded places. And a lot of them have been bought up by a big company to where, they're 3% of the business of a big company. So even if they get, if Boeing just bought, Kevin's, drone keyboard company that is going to get his big contract, is it what? Is it a pimple on the ass of Boeing, or what is it? I mean, are you going to buy Boeing because they got a $30 million drone contract? Probably not. When one plane costs $400 million, so it's more difficult than you think. I was watching a thing about railroads yesterday. There's now four railroads in the country, which real railroads, which is insane. But our idiots from the last three administrations have all let that happen, make that last four or five. And how the average locomotive is 20 years old or 25 years old. Now, someday, somewhere, especially if what you're talking about is true, we bring a little more manufacturing back, someday they're going to have to replace all these things. Well, now, okay, if somebody's going to buy 20,000 locomotives or 10,000, well, that's a lot. Is that enough to move the needle on GE? I don't know, is it? They make locomotives, and who knows, somebody else makes them. Can you go buy GE because you think there's a... The logic
well,
of what
and do you think it's ongoing, going concern type of business, or it's one time and we'll see you again in 20 years, as you've discussed? You'd like to think government has learned to be a little smarter about that, but I doubt it. But there are other industries where they do, because they really care about that depreciation expense line, and they want to manage it in a way that that says I have to manage my fleet of whatever it is that I'm using, And then there's a lot of companies that are really committed to getting leaner and leaner so that they actually can make things more profitably. So, you have those kinds of considerations as well, as who is really good at that, as opposed to who is throwing away 5% of everything they make because they make it wrong and they can't sell it.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying what you're describing is the absolute way people on the low—I won't say the lower end—on the bottom up kind of people. That's how you should be investing. God, what is this company doing? It looks like their business is growing. It looks like they've spent capital the right way. They've got the right equipment. They've got business. Looks like they're getting more. And what I'm saying is that leads you to all these kind of complex dead ends of, wait a minute, they got bought 3 years ago by somebody, and now maybe somebody's trying to put them out of business because they also own a competing company. It gets that's why all the money is going into 4 or 5 or 10 places, because that's what you hear about all day, right? I mean, I have to assume that part of Caterpillar's strength is because of what you're talking about, right? I mean, if we bring some of the rare earth mining stuff back here, I'm thinking they're using some Caterpillar bulldozers and stuff, don't you? But how do you quantify that?
Well, and if we're going to have a rare earth material strategic reserve, who's going to be doing that?
Yeah, but now,
I don't know the answer to that. But
wouldn't you like to? I would.
Well, I would. I just don't. I don't know. I'm sure it's discoverable, though.
And what's the timing? Are they going to say it's up and running in 3 years? Will it really be 3 or will it be 30? I mean, we seem to be good at that lately, too, right?
Well, or will it be up and running in, 6 months? Will it be in startup in 6 months?
And
continuing to expand.
That would be one in how many? The last people everybody keeps proposing. Not just the last year. I mean, for the last however many years, everybody comes out with these big winners. How many? When's the last time? Well, it's a horrible question for you, but Obama, Trump, Biden, Trump went out and took a spade into the ground for the first shovel, where the thing actually was done, or maybe was even bigger 10 years later.
Man. Well, I will tell you this: that the current Trump version of the Trump administration is very biased to action. And you saw that with the southern border. You've seen that with deportations, whether you like it or not. You've seen it. You saw him announce this. Trump RX or whatever they call the government thing to sell medications cheaper. What did we see when in the last administration, when the infrastructure bill passed? How much of that stuff actually made it to market? And they had like 3 years to do it. There was a big focus on having charging stations, and they were going to spend billions of dollars putting up charging stations all over the country so that we could move to electronic vehicles. How many got built? I think about 5.
The Tesla got involved in that, and they were going to do it, and then they weren't, and it was all kinds of stuff. That's what I'm saying. A lot of this stuff is falling by the wayside by every administration.
So my question is the current bias for action. I mean, when you say, when you say run government like a business, and you always correct that and say it is a business, I think this time you are seeing, a real insistence that, okay, if we're going to do it now. Just go do it now, instead of just throwing a lot of money at NGOs and hoping to God they don't do anything more than lining their pockets.
I would think that this group is lining their pockets more than any other group, but that's another.
Well, they may be, but they're also rolling stuff out.
I was thinking more in terms,
like it or not, Tom, they are. I mean, they are. You're seeing more action. You're seeing more action on.
I'm seeing a lot of action
on foreign policy. You're seeing it in a lot of areas, much, much faster than you ever saw it before.
What I'm saying is, does anybody have the 10-year plan to bring, here's how the businesses are coming back. Are we going to And Bill Moriarty was saying some of the places in Texas, they don't have any enough power for the new businesses. And it's not like people, they don't have power, they don't have any water. Now, it's not like the last administration caused all that problem. All of a sudden, they had no need for that kind of water or power. I mean, everybody now is this thing with AI. Everybody's going to have this huge power regeneration. Kevin, are they going to not need it? Like we needed all the power for the cloud. I mean, there's a process to this. I mean, how is Commonwealth Edison going to put up five new plants in case Chicago gets an AI plant? I mean, I see a lot of stuff out there. I don't know that, and this is not a shot at the current group. I'm saying for the last 25 years, I haven't seen a whole lot of long term thinking anywhere.
Right, and so you will see some states that are more nimble about ramping up power generation and things like that. That are more willing to do it quickly, and one of them's not going to be Illinois.
Well, when you say ramp up, I mean so somebody else can build a nuclear plant faster.
Well, it might be nuclear plant. It might be increasing coal capacity.
When's the last time somebody built a coal plant?
Remember, they've all been forced into reducing coal capacity, so if you lift the restrictions on there, you can ramp back up and you can generate more power.
I don't know that they've been... The bleep show that was in Commonwealth Edison here, I don't know that you can... If you can say they were forced into it. The Pilsen plant, maybe. They ran up against deadlines that were there for a decade. They never spent any dough, and once they got there, they said, screw it. No, I don't know that the lack of investment in some of these places. I'm not so sure Commonwealth Edison gives a crap who's in office. They've been running the same way for 100 and some years. It's a monopoly. I'm not so sure the rest of them aren't either.
Well, and it's Illinois, so it's a monopoly that is completely tied into state government. State government's totally corrupt when it comes to it. So, yeah, that's why I said it's not going to be Illinois, but you're going to
see... So you're saying Illinois is more corrupt than NIPSCO. I don't know if they are or not.
Pretty sure they are.
Well, but that's your shtick. If it's a Democratic state, they're more corrupt. That may not be the case. I mean, you don't know.
Did I say that, Tom?
That's the impression.
That's your impression. That's not what I said.
Okay. It's what you... Whatever. I'm saying that... All these things are massive investment projects now. Somehow or another, the places that have been charging people forever in every state don't seem to have the money for ongoing maintenance and stuff. Now, where's that money going, Kevin? Is it going to political contributions? Is it going to the pockets of the management? Doesn't seem. I mean, I've told you stories about Commonwealth Edison talking about how even though they're supposed to be doing this on a yearly basis, right? That some of the transformers that are on the pole behind your house are 100 years old. No, that can't be. They all got to be, we're up to where the oldest one is, whatever. It was like 20 or 30 years old. So they needed a big rate increase. Now, I don't know. People out east seem to think that Con Ed is just as bad or worse. Now, where they are, and I don't know. And some of my buddies, there's an outage down in Inglewood in the summer. So nobody's got any air conditioning, and he goes down there. Of course, There's a bunch of people watching him try and fix his transformer, and he says he's the only white guy there. But there was no problem. Everybody was nice, and so he looks at the date on the thing. It was like, something like September 1918 or something on the thing. So he goes to turn it on, and he goes, I'm not turning this thing on. So he asks one of the guys. He goes, hey, would you do me a favor? Go find me like a long stick. The kid goes, okay. He comes back with a big long stick. He reaches up from his, the little cherry picker, and he reaches across with a stick, and he shoves the thing on, and it worked, and the whole place is cheering him and stuff. He goes, I wasn't going to touch that thing. He goes, what are they talking about, 40 years? It was 100 years. I mean, I got to believe this stuff's happening all over the place, and people somehow get away with it. I don't get it. I don't see how they, I don't know why, And then you have guys like Bill Moriarty say that whatever state you're in, he's... By and large, the guys that run the highways and do the water treatment plants and stuff are very dedicated, very good, and people kind of leaves them alone. Where maybe it's out of the politics. I don't know. But there's like a group that's out of the politics and kind of does their job, and there's a group that is sort of in the politics, and all we hear about is the crap, right? It's like you're asking me what stocks seem to be in and what stocks seem to be out, and And I'm going to ask you what day you're talking about, right? And it seems like there's no cohesiveness along the way here anywhere that that people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. Or is that just me being grumpy?
Well, could be both.
Could be both. I mean, I don't think, has Common Edison ever done a terrific job? But now that it's the point where Chicago had, and I have, you know, pretty serious intel on this, is when they built the CBOE in 1983. One of the reasons why they built it was Chicago had by far the highest capacity for electric and for backup systems than anybody in the country. And I'm going to say that is not the case now, Kevin. Now, who does? I guess is my other question. I don't know. Is there any place that does? I mean, I couldn't name them.
Yeah. Well, couldn't tell you because I don't know the industry well enough. That would be a Bill Moriarty question.
Yeah, I mean, I have to believe that some areas that have hydroelectric, maybe the Tennessee Valley, wouldn't surprise me if those states took a lead in some of this, because I bet they got, I don't know, because they've also had a lot of increase in population. I would say that they might be a spot, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and that's what I meant. And, you know, I mean, some of it is, you know, what natural resource gifts do you have? Which of those natural resource gifts are being utilized? Because, my God, there's a lot of natural resources in Canada, but they are California, same thing.
Yeah.
California, and they refuse to use them.
Chicago also has a boatload of water. And I'm not talking about using Lake Michigan, but if you get onto the nuclear facility, is it Dresden, Kevin? You drive, especially if you go by there in the wintertime, it's pretty fascinating because they I don't know if there was a lake there, but they ended up expanding or just using, there's a massive lake that they use to cool the nuclear plant. I don't know, can you do that in Arizona? I don't think so. I mean, here it's easy to do, right? So, you know, is there any nuclear plant that's under construction now? I don't think there is there?
I don't know.
I think the last one came online maybe a year or two ago down in Georgia. It's kind of a crowd question. But now, is anybody, would you, given the politics, I'm not talking about the person, given the starting and stopping we seem to be in on, would you, if you had a bunch of money, would you start building a plant that took 15 years to build?
No.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's, there it sounds like, Carl. I mean,
Carl's here, thankfully.
Well, that's part of the issue, right?
Yeah, so the question is, how long should it take to build?
Well, no, the question, this is the same problem that I brought up when these guys, you know, Trump starts talking about Greenland ought to be annexed, right? And the people that live there currently tolerate a all-in tax cost that is assessed on them by the government that they live under, that's roughly double what the average person who lives in Greenland today would pay if they were American instead.
Yeah, but what's included?
Okay. Well, hold on a minute, Chief. So you ask yourself, you say, why would the people of Greenland, even when bribed with $100,000 each, which Trump also tried to do, if you remember, okay, why would the people of Greenland, given that deal, why would they turn it down? Well, the reason they would turn it down is because stupidity, when you live in a place where it's 20 below zero for 4 months out of the year, very reliably kills you. All right? There is no recovery from stupidity under those conditions. And the problem that they have is that this may be a wonderful thing today from them because their sleds, which they need to get around during those 4 months, run on gasoline. And so, you know, gasoline, all right, there you are. This is fine. and then in 2 years, it will be illegal for you to use a gasoline-powered sled.
Are you supposed to, I thought you're supposed to use dogs.
Well, you can use dogs.
They may wind up using them.
Yeah.
But, batteries do not work at 20 below zero temperatures. Okay, never mind that if you run out of battery power, you die for sure because you're 50 miles away from anything when it happens. So they have looked at this and said, quite logically, Oh, by the way, the reason the Inuit have survived for this long is because the dumb ones are all dead. And the ones who weren't stupid are still alive. And their genetic line has proceeded, and the stupid genetic lines did not. They have come to the conclusion that being American would be stupid because there is no stability. This is the exact same reason, incidentally, that even though Ronald Reagan reversed Jimmy Carter's shutdown of American nuclear fuel reprocessing on his first day in office, there has not been a single commercial investment in doing it since, because Carter stranded billions of dollars of investment when he made that order.
And the people.
And the people on top of it, but he stranded the investment. Now, think about this. Everybody loves Elon Musk, right? Or at least today they do. They think he's some kind of a god. Okay, I put an article...
Some do.
Well, some do, some don't. I happen to be a don't. And I put up an article a few days ago because, you know, he wants to take this XAI and SpaceX and merge them, and then, of course, take the combined thing public. And so I put up a list of things that that he's essentially stranded. And somehow he has managed to convince both the board of Tesla and investors to buy into this company that exists only because it has managed to fleece the American taxpayer and force you to pay him $1,000 when you buy a Chevy. Now, Trump has ended this, okay? But, of course, it could come back in another 2 years. But the thing is, this guy said very loudly, very publicly, in 2015, that by the end of 2017, you're going to be able to get into one of his cars in Los Angeles with a six-pack in the back seat with a pillow and a blanket. And you know, you'd have to get out to plug it in between there and New York, but you'd emerge from the other end in New York not having had to touch the wheel. It's 2026, and... okay. So here's the thing. He shut down two of his car lines, two models. He's got two more that are in decline in terms of number of delivered vehicles. And he's got one that's a commercial failure, which is a Cybertruck. He's got 250,000.
And it's ugly.
It looks like my daughter calls it a garbage truck every time she sees one. And which I think is funny as hell because it really kind of does look like a garbage truck.
Yeah, I go with dumpster.
Yeah, well, there you go. Dumpster works too.
How do you sell a vehicle where the windows in it are illegal?
Chief, hell if I know. All right, but here's the thing. All right, he's got a production capacity of 250,000 vehicles a year. He's sold 25,000. Okay, I mean this is a commercial failure, no matter how you slice it. Now, here's the thing with this though. So he's done this. He's got no new models announced to take the place of the ones that are being retired. By the way, one of them is the Roadster, the Model S, all right? And so that's the economic picture on this. What does this mean? It means he stranded the battery plant. This is stranded capital now that's been spent. He stranded the superchargers, okay, which is maybe one of the most important elements of that. Oh, by the way, the federal government paid for an awful lot of those installations during Biden's administration.
That's what Kevin was saying.
Yeah, and now that's stranded capital, all right? And all this other stuff. I mean, the company has a stock price of $400. Right? Now, explain this one to me like I'm five, right?
Well, because it's the hype.
I'm just saying, you know, and then you've got Palantir that's out there. Their guy... Who's their CTO? Who, by the way, ought not even be in the United States, if you want my opinion, is out there touting how AI is not going to be the destroyer of worlds and the destroyer of jobs and blah blah blah. It's going to be it's going to be the best thing ever. Oh, by the way, the only thing that you can find that Palantir actually manages to do is find ways to screw people, whether it's by selling services to government or selling services to private firms. The fact of the matter is that who are these guys? They sell data analysis to the government to declare you a terrorist risk on a plane or whatever, right? I mean, that's their business. excuse me? you know, the list goes on, but here we are. And then you have this dislocation that's going on right now in Bitcoin, which, you know, I've called it that for a long time.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that in a bit because we talked a little bit earlier, but I have some questions for you.
Well, there's a very, very bad thing that's going on there. And oh, by the way, that rotation, I just got done having drinks last night with a friend of mine who's absolutely convinced.
I hope you had some sleep. You didn't just get done.
Well, no, not just get done. Right. Last evening, okay.
Okay.
But he likes shiny things, and is absolutely convinced that, you know, this is just a minor little dip, Yeah, okay, you're down 50% from the high roughly in silver. That's not so good. Oh, by the way, did you pay any attention to where the money flow was coming from? What was coming out of crypto? Okay, going into here. Oh, but COMEX has this notice for delivery. I said, okay, you've never heard of a thing called a calendar spread, right?
Right.
you know, the futures market. By the way, I trade futures, so I know a little bit about this. I trade options too. You know, calendar spreads are kind of a thing.
Where's the delivery point for silver?
You know, I don't know precisely, but he is absolutely. Chief, how many times have you heard? You know. How many times have you heard this? You know, remember LMBH and nickel, what was it, 10, 15 years ago, was there were people running around saying that nickel was going to the moon and was going to go permanently there because there was, you know, there were all these contracts that were out that were going to expire, they were going to be for delivery, and da-da-da-da. Well, of course, the LMBH still exists, right? The exchange did not blow up. And he's absolutely convinced that COMEX is finished because, you know, in March, this contract is, I'm like, no, you do not understand how this works. No, they're not finished, but you might be if you continue to believe in it.
Well, people they don't understand markets, and everybody thinks they do, right? But some of the statements you'll hear are so ignorant you can't even go there. People would say, money's coming out of Bitcoin and going into metals.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? What do you mean money's coming out? Every time you sell a Bitcoin, somebody else buys. There's another right. person. There's no net money in or out. The selling pressure might be on the sell side. That's why the thing is down. But you still have to have a buyer for everyone. So who's to say right. that you didn't pull your money out to put it in gold, and the other guy sold his gold to buy it from you? I mean, the idea that there isn't another side is amazing to me after 40 years doing this.
Chief, what never ceases to amaze me is that everybody says I made money when everything goes up, as if it never came. There wasn't someone on the other side of the transaction, right?
Yeah,
right. For with the exception of an IPO or an issuance of, you know, of a secondary offering, for every single transaction in the securities markets, for every buyer, there is a seller.
Yeah.
Somebody thinks the price will be higher tomorrow than it is today, and somebody else thinks the price will be lower.
If you have Walmart today, and I'm not predicting it, Walmart's trading 126.71. By the way, it's been a horse this week. If Walmart opened tomorrow, which, again, I'm not... If it opened at 100, people will say, well, what did everybody do with the money? And I go, what money? there's no money there. There was no transaction. Just the value went from 126 to 100. Yeah, but you know, if it happened over a couple of days, people go, what did people do with all the... What do you mean the money? The bubble is gone. I mean, right?
It just never ceases to surprise me. And then the other, and this is one of the problems that people have. So, like, you know, now you have this issue that's arising in crypto. There was not too long ago, I think it was like a year and a half ago, there was this thing that they called the halving. It was basically a reset of the hash rate, and that you needed to get a block, okay, in order to be the owner of the solution that you come up with for the math problem. People believed, because the word halving was used, that this meant that the energy required, and the only you can't compute the cost to mine a Bitcoin in dollars, because the cost of electrical power is not is variable from place to place.
Well, the guys who built the place right next to the Grand Coulee Dam that were using their power at night, are they still around?
Well, so there's a few things that have happened over time. When this thing first started, people were mining using GPUs in desktop computers, okay? And then they took a bunch of those GPUs and put them in chassis, and that was mining stuff. Well, okay, that
before you go into this, yeah. The thing you said, when you say, is there, what do you mean by mining? Is there some mathematical algorithm that you have to yes. solve that is,
yeah,
it
yes.
takes?
Yes.
Okay.
But who, yes, that's essential.
If I wanted to do it tomorrow, where would I go get the problem? Is there a spot?
It's public.
Okay.
Okay. So essentially, what you have to do is solve a hashing problem. It's essentially a factoring problem when you get down to it.
But it's got to be huge.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
But when you get that, then you, as your reward for doing this work, is a Bitcoin. Okay. Now,
who publishes the problem?
Well, all kinds of people are trying to solve it, right?
Yeah, but who put it up there in the first place?
Well, it's
Mr. Bitcoin.
When the coin is invented, okay, this problem is invented, and the way they're designed is that they get harder as time goes on.
So the guy who walked down the mountaintop with the kung fu beard, he did all this.
The guy who walked down the mountaintop with the kung fu beard conveniently arranged to have the first 500 of them be already done in his.
Okay. We have no idea who that is.
Well, you know, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, but this is the way these crypto things work, is that they're all Ponzi schemes where the person who invents them gets a freebie, okay, that everyone else pays for, which is kind of it's a cute arrangement that so many people have bought into this BS, but it is what it is. So the problem is, though, is that when this last thing happened, the energy requirement in order to come up with a coin went up very substantially. All right, so halving did not mean it got easier.
how long does it take? I mean, is there a certain amount?
Well, it's an energy expenditure thing. With current ASICs, it takes quite a while, and now everything's done with application specific chips. All right, because it's no longer economic to try to do it with anything else. But the problem is that the cost in terms of kilowatt hours, the way it ends up working out is that if you're paying, say, 12 to 13, 14 cents a kilowatt hour, it's just what I pay around my area, is about 12 cents, you're talking about a cost to, quote-unquote, mine a single coin that is well beyond what the current price is. Now, there's a problem with this.
No, but if you've got a deal with Commonwealth Edison to only do it at night when the nuclear reactors are still on and they can't sell it, what can you get that down to? 6, 8, 9, 4?
Well, but even that is above the current price.
Okay, but I mean,
so here's the thing. At six,
I guess my question is, how good of a deal can you get if you're willing?
Well,
to...
Well, I don't know, but maybe okay. not. At six, it might work. So like at 6 cents, I think the current cost is somewhere around 51. I mean, now if you can manage to get power at 3 cents, then yeah, it's profitable.
But you still got to haul all your stuff wherever that is, right?
Well, you got to haul your stuff, but the other problem is you have to pay for the equipment too. All right, I mean, those ASICs are not cheap. All right, so that's just the power consumption. Then you also have to add to that the capital depreciation on the equipment. And so this is the basic problem right now is that the cost versus operating curve has inverted on people because the price has gone down to the degree that it has. And the other issue that comes up with this, which most people, and anybody that has done any kind of study of this understands basically how this works internally. But when you put a transaction up in the blockchain, you and I, let's say that you and I exchange Bitcoin for something else, whether it be dollars or whatever have you. When that transaction goes up into the blockchain, somebody has to verify it. And when you get a certain number of verifications that the signatures are correct, then it is committed to the blockchain and it's a valid transaction. And until that point, it's
not. How would I ever know that somebody else's transaction is correct?
Well, that's you put it out there.
I mean, how does the people out there, who are they?
Well,
how do they
know? Okay, the miners are the ones that are responsible for performing the verification checks.
Okay.
Okay, the problem with this is when they are no longer profitably able to mine coins, you now have the potential of a fold-back collapse in the transaction capacity. Because I now can't profitably mine coins, but I am still obligated as a miner. Part of what I have to do while I'm running these hashes is confirm other people's transactions.
Okay, well, this thing,
it's part of the process.
AI says 19.9 million bitcoins have been mined, and there's a hard stop at 21. So
that's right.
So at 21, who's going to do all this stuff?
Well, there's the other problem, Chief, is that when you first there's only 21 million that can ever be mined,
supposedly.
As you that's the design of the system. As you approach this, the difficulty of mining one becomes exponentially harder. That's what each of these halvings is. Okay, so as you get closer and closer to the last one, the power requirement necessary to mine the next one goes up exponentially as you get closer. Now, the problem that no one has solved, because there aren't good answers, is once you can't mine them anymore at a cost that anyone can pay, because the exponential difficulty of getting the next one is too high, how do you pay for the transaction verification?
Well, you could do something sneaky. I'm not giving them advice. It's estimated 3 to 4 million of the mined bitcoins are permanently lost.
But you can't be sure they're permanently lost.
Okay.
That's true. They have not moved in some ridiculously long period of time. Okay. The presumption is somebody had them on a thumb drive or something and they're gone. All right. Because someone put it in the washing machine and it doesn't work anymore.
That's
I've done that, not with bitcoins, but yeah.
I'm just saying. I mean, that's the presumption, right? Is they're gone?
That's 20% of all of them. That's a lot.
Well, I know, but Chief, here's the problem: you can't reissue those because you can't prove they're gone. I could have a thumb drive with them sitting in my safe.
Okay.
If I show up with it, listen, the first time that you play with that and somebody shows up with one that you think was gone and you reissued it, the first time somebody shows up with that, 5 years from now, the entire thing collapses. All of it. And it all becomes worthless. Because now you've violated the premise on which it operates, which is that they can't be counterfeited.
Okay, so Tom, no. and I'm going to go in just a second. I've just got to campus. I'm going to go in. But this is why when I tell you my interest in blockchain is 100% around, you know, how it can be used for supply chain transparency. Because you're not running on an open platform like, you know, Bitcoin, where everybody participates and anybody can mine it. You go on to, you know, something like IBM's blockchain platform. They're going to control that. You're going to pay as a subscriber. You're going to get your suppliers on there. You're going to get your transportation companies on there and so on. And, you know, everybody is going to be updating a ledger, and who has access to the ledger is strictly based on permissions. So that's a little bit different, and it just so happens we didn't quite get through the data section of my supply chain technologies class last Tuesday, so I'm going to open with the last piece, which is blockchain. And so it's the same technology, it's just done differently. This whole mining aspect, you still have to have proof of work, proof of ownership. You know, those kinds of things are still important to have consensus around the transactions, but it's not the same murky situation that you're looking at with cryptocurrencies.
Well, part of the problem is this, is that, you know, you've got people who I mean, if you look at the technically, there's a difference between what's written down on a piece of paper somewhere, okay, which ultimately led the, you know, is that because the miners are the ones that validate, when there are no more coins to mine, then the business model shifts to being paid to validate, okay? And because there is no barrier to entry on this, there's no central clearinghouse like there is with, wire transfers are all through Fedwire, right? there's one place and one institution that validates a Fedwire transaction. It is Federal Reserve. That is not true here, but the mining difficulty, they adjust this in hashing power to try to keep the blocks to one every 10 minutes or so, the computation. The problem with that is that there is a hard limit of 21 million coins. All right? That's all there is.
Other than everybody knows that, how does anybody know that?
Well, that's the design of the algorithm, is that there's only so many solutions.
Well, I'm saying that that's what we've all been told, but we don't know who we've been told by.
Well, actually, you do, because the algorithm is public.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so I mean, it's not, the algorithm's not secret, but the thing is that there's this mythology in that the current way that the adjustment process has been done is, as technology has improved, as hardware has improved, and you know, the efficiency of hashing has gone up, you adjust mining difficulty upward because ASICs become more efficient, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it looks like this mirrors kind of sort of the difficulty and the remaining coins that are left, but that's actually not what's going on. What they're trying to do is keep the introduction rate of finding new blocks reasonably constant. The problem with this is that 21 million is a hard wall. Okay.
So who's going to make the decision to pay other people?
Well, this is the unanswered question, Chief, which is, as we get closer and closer to this, is the social decision, not the technical decision, because the hash rate adjustment is not a technical question. It's an operational question. All right, humans make it, not the algorithm. All right, where is the business model for this thing to continue once all 21 million have been found? And the answer is, well, they'll get their profit from the transaction fees. In other words, it'll be like, you know, the Visa MasterCard network, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, will they? And by the way, these calculations are a hell of a lot harder. The validation calculations are much, much harder than, is this credit card valid? Much harder.
Yeah, right? So the point being is, is it worth it? Can you validate transactions in a way that is affordable for people who want to do transactions and still allow people who do the validation to make some money? And the answer to that is, we don't know yet.
Well, yeah, and here's the other problem too, is that you can attach, so a miner gets to pick and choose which transactions to include in the next block that they're trying to hash. All right, so there is competition between these guys, but and once you are the person that has confirmed the block, you're the one that holds the block, all right? So therefore, you essentially, in that block, you have a future monopoly. But there's a problem with this, in that these guys, you're assuming, number one, there's no cartelization that goes on in the behavior. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
All right? And then the second problem is, that means those coins are not actually fungible. When you get down, when I'm going to find new coins is the way to make money, I'm going to find new blocks and get them confirmed, and that's mine, okay? That's no longer how I make a profit. Now how I make a profit has to be confirming transaction streams. When I get into that world, now all of a sudden coins are not fungible, because the cost in order to confirm a transaction one block may not be the same as the cost to confirm one in a different block. and my coin traces to a block. Now, that's a problem, all right? And where does that come out? What happens if you, Chief, if you think about this, what if your cost to transact for a Bitcoin transaction, just because of the one you hold in your wallet, that transaction, you know, the coins say it's worth $50,000, but it costs $500 for you to transact your coin, but it costs $200 for somebody to transact their coin.
Oh, that's probably.
But they're all supposed to be the same. Wait a minute, they're not.
Yeah.
Okay. There are all sorts of discontinuities in here that today don't come to play.
I will bet you two gentlemen a beer, or a better beverage, that somewhere somebody, whoever the somebody is, makes use of the 3 to 4 million that are dead, in some sort of a rotating where we're going to take 100,000 of them that are 25 years old, and we're gonna reissue 20,000 of those out of this pool. And if one does show up, we're just gonna rotate to a different one. And every year we're gonna add some to the pool, because clearly, if it's been 25 years, they're not all gonna show up tomorrow. You might get a few, but they're gonna find some way to mathematically do that.
Well, anyone that actually, you know, plays this game and does that and ends up as part of it, God forbid if they grab the wrong one and somebody shows up with that coin.
Well, I mean, it'll end up being, you know, for instance, I mean, I'm not, no clearing firm could ever do this, but if you put your IBM in street name, okay, right, and it's just sitting at some firm for 30 years, and it's still yours, and
right,
the difference is it's yours, but it's been loaned out to 150 different people all along the way. If you show up and say, I'd like my IBM back, or I want to sell it, do you really care if it's the same IBM?
Well,
if it's the same numbered certificate, you don't care.
Well, now remember, there's, as I said, there's a difference here in that the person that owns the block has effective monopoly control on the trace back into its origin.
Right.
Okay, therefore they have effective monopoly control in the transaction stream within the block. The problem with this should be rather apparent in that there's no regulatory structure that has any kind of force of law that says that the cost of transacting must be a fixed number, okay, and therefore everyone pays the same price. This is essentially a structural dislocation that's very similar to, well, these five insurance companies all got together and decided that $400 MRI is going to be $3,000.
Right.
Okay. And this is there's all sorts of unanswereds in all of these cryptos that are there are second order effects that nobody thinks about today factor.
In some areas, and then we got to go break. But in some areas, we have kind of morphed off what you're talking about anyway. But I'll use this for instance. I mean, nobody does this anymore. I mean, some firms probably still would, but if you uncovered Grandpa Carl had, 100 shares of IBM, and you got a right certificate, and you set it up, hey, Chief, can I open up an account at PTI and put this in there? Well, we probably have to fight with RBC, but they're clearly, Grandpa Carl should still be registered somewhere, because a dividend check should be going to his house, right?
I mean, right, exactly.
So, but if he comes in or you come in with his certificate, and RBC accepts it, and it goes in your account. And then, for whatever, 5 years later, you go, I want another certificate. Well, okay, but I don't even know if people issue certificates anymore. But if they did, you wouldn't care if the certificate had the same number on it, would you? You're going to get a...
No, but that's because a share of IBM stock is fungible.
Okay, but I'm saying is because these exchanges, I'm unclear on if somebody puts their Bitcoin into, say, Coinbase, into an exchange... Do you cough them up your password? Is it essentially in street name at that point? And if you want it back out, you're not getting the same Bitcoin, are you?
Well, see, now that's an open question. I'm not entirely sure how that works within the exchanges.
Because yeah, I don't either.
I've never done.
Because all of a sudden, you can essentially put it in street name, like you can with securities, like most people are in securities. You could do something with this 3 to 4 million that are allegedly dead. Because
one of the things that's kind of interesting about that is that
by the way, if they do that, they owe us some money for consulting, for telling them this idea, right?
Well, and if you think about it, Chief, there's if I have a security that's at Schwab or Fido or IB or wherever, right, and it's a street name, which pretty much everybody that owns stock today does, right?
Yep.
Then somebody goes to short it. That isn't me, and my shares got borrowed. Okay, now they're obligated. If I want to sell it, they're obligated to replace the shares, but they're not the same shares.
Right, that's exactly my point.
Right, and that's fine, but that's only fine because a share of IBM is fungible with all the other shares of IBM. Okay, which specific share I hold doesn't change anything. The problem with Bitcoin is that which specific Bitcoin I hold does.
Well,
because
I guess
somebody mined the block.
Right, my question is, once it enters whatever the never land of Coinbase and these other exchanges are, does that stop? Does it become like IBM? And I don't know the answer to that.
No, because at the core, the owner of the block has an essential monopoly control on the block.
Okay, all right.
And transactions within it. So there is a problem.
So it's
there.
Theoretically not the same.
Well, people today are treating it as though it is.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. What do you say we go to break and let's try and figure out when we come back if the risk keeps going here in the market, which doesn't look like it is today because we're bouncing back. The risk keeps going. What are we looking at? S&P futures now up 38, and NASDAQ futures up 172, which is about 40% of the drop yesterday, so it's not even a Fibonacci return, at least not yet. We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Ricky Garcia on the board. S&P futures up 37, NASDAQ futures up 163. So we get a little bit of a bounce back here. A lot of this happened, we'll talk about it in a second, a big turnaround in crypto last night. And Carl will probably tell us that he was the buyer, I don't know. DAX up 133.5%, FTSE up 14.1%, CAC round up 1. So these guys are down up less than they were the last time we did this an hour ago. We're in Asia, Nikkei up 435.8%, Hang Seng down 325, 1.1%. Shanghai up down 10.2%, so a mixed bag over there. Bonds unchanged, 4.2. Oil down 20 cents, 63.09. Oil seems to have locked into this 62 to 64 range, not the same as the 57 to 59, so let's say it's up. The range is up $4 over a few weeks ago. Natural gas up 7 cents, 358. RBOB, 193, so that's why your gas prices aren't so high, aren't so as high as they were. Gold up 38, 49, 28, which is a little bit of a bounce back. Silver down another $2, so 74.60. Again, silver traded 112 maybe 2 weeks ago. So that's a number. Foreign exchange. The euro, pretty much unchanged, 118. British pound, 136. So been steady. The dollar was down a lot and came back a little bit this week, but not much. But here's the number. Crypto, Bitcoin is trading 67,155. They touched 60,000 last night, probably 7-8 o'clock. And somebody, not saying it's the government, not accusing anybody, somebody obviously came in and bought. It's a serious bounce off the 60,000 number. Even Ethereum, which has been down every day, is up $85. That's almost 5%. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
How's it going, Chief? 7:40 a.m. here in Chicago, 32 degrees right now with a high of 37. Breezy and a snow shower this afternoon. There can be freezing drizzle as well, so expect a slippery morning today. Phoenix, Arizona, 62 degrees right now with a high of 81. Very warm with sunshine and a few clouds. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 54 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, heavy traffic inbound on Stevenson, Eisenhower, and then Ryan. That's inbound. Some stop-and-go traffic from Avondale to Central Avenue on Kennedy. Other than that, Edens is clear as day. NFL, the NFC won Pro Bowl game 66-52 this Tuesday. And this Sunday, we have the Super Bowl, Seahawks versus Patriots at 5:30 p.m. Lastly, the Bulls won. The Bulls lost to Raptors yesterday, 123-107, and we also have the Suns losing to Warriors, 101-97. Back over to you, Chief.
What did the legendary Mr. T say, Kyle? I pity the fool who sold his Bitcoin at 60,000, only to see it now 67. I pity the fool.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's. There'd be a problem with that, of course, which is, you know, technical bounces don't usually hold, right?
Well, is it technical, or is it Secretary Bessent saying if that he wanted to, he could buy Bitcoin?
Well, that's a lie, and he knows it.
I think these guys do whatever they want, but that's another story. He shouldn't be able to.
You know, okay. So, all the how many of these places? I mean, you know, you look at the MicroStrategies of the world, right? By the way, GameStop, you know, which had their business model, you know, essentially collapse around them due to no real fault of their own originally. All right, I mean, if you think about what, you know, they were the place to go take your physical games and, you know, and trade them because you got half of what you paid, but you're done and. Somebody else gets it at 75% of the original price, and you know there's a business there, right? And then all the game developers go to online delivery, which they love because first off they can throw you out and erase it from your console.
Yeah,
right. Which I mean, you know, that's very much Amazon. By the way, has done that with the Kindles. All of a sudden, they unpublish a book that you bought. And now, by the way, that's most people would say they stole it, and if they're going to do that, they have to give you the money back, right? Plus interest. But of course, that never happens.
No.
So you know, we got the same kind of thing going on here, and so you know, I see some of this same. It's all one of the same piece. If you think about it, Chief. I mean, it's,
that would be the theme of the show.
Yeah, I mean it's all some of the same piece, okay? You know, you've got in Tennessee a really nasty ice storm didn't get me, but did get everybody over towards Nashville, right? And yet you had the people over there that run the electric system, the grid in the town and surrounding communities, that decided a number of years ago that DEI was the only thing that mattered. Number one. And number two, that trees were more important than people and reliable power. Therefore, we're not going to trim any of them because we want the canopy to be more beautiful. And so we're going to leave the ones up.
Well, they don't want to pay anybody.
Duh.
Yeah.
And so on top of that, while we are making this, you know, this green push thing, the other part of it is we're not spending the $15 million that we were going to spend trimming the trees, right? Then the ice storm comes and... Of course, all those branches that you left over hanging the lines break off and take the lines down. All right, that's bad. You don't have the supplies to put them all back up. And on top of that, you're not willing to pay the guys, the hotshots that run around after hurricanes and ice storms and put lines back up. Of course, their demanded price is five times the normal one. Because they're working during the worst possible conditions imaginable. But hey,
sometimes it's not. I know guys that when they had a big issue in Carolina like 3 years ago, these guys from Chicago all piled into their trucks, were heading down there, and they called ahead, and the guys go, "We're not paying union wage." They all pulled in a truck stop and turned around. It wasn't five times. They just wanted whatever they were making up here.
Well, the same thing happened here, okay, is that these guys, because I know some of these dudes, And you know, they said, okay, you know, here's the price. They said, go bite yourself. Okay, well, go bite yourself sounds interesting, except, by the way, there's 100,000 people down here with no power. But then here's one of the more evil parts of this. Nashville, when Biden was president, attempted to ban gas furnaces and gas cooking appliances.
So did New York. Did that ever happen?
I understand that. They tried to do it there. The state government came in and preempted their ability to do this. Okay. Now, if you had been subjected to that, and then you have this ice storm, and you have the mismanagement of the electrical grid in that area, now you're really screwed. Because if I've got a small generator and a gas furnace, a little hand carryable one dude that can carry it, I have one of these things.
How many people, everybody I talk to from the South, when I have some clients down there, very few have a furnace. They all have a heat pump.
Well, okay, so a heat pump, it depends on what you're running. Okay, where I live, there's a mixture. Some people have straight heat pumps. Some people have dual fuel. Okay, and some people have air conditioner plus gas. All right, same thing in Florida. My house was air conditioner plus gas. Heat was gas. Now, which ends up being the cheaper to run depends greatly upon the temperature at any given time. The most expensive unit to buy is the one that does both, because you pay for the heat pump and then you also have to pay the extra money for the gas furnace. But instead of having heat strips as a backup in that situation, you have an actual furnace, okay? But that also means that you can compute, based upon the cost of power today, the cost of gas today, you can compute, it's a mathematical function, which is the cheaper to run, and therefore you can have the system switch between the two depending on which is the better price. All right, so your total cost to operate goes down. Now, over a period of a few years, this pays for the additional cost of the gas furnace. Okay. I mean, not in a year.
Well, there's guys up here, and I haven't seen it lately because I haven't really talked to too many of these bigger firms. But there's guys up here that are recommending, we'll get off this subject in a minute, but sometimes it's interesting, that even in this area, you get a nice heat pump with the air conditioning piece of it as well, and you get maybe some hot water in the kitchen floors and bathroom floors that if it's ever 20 below zero, you turn that on and bring the house up to 35 and then let the heat pump do the rest of the way.
No, it's the math does not work materially north of where I live. Okay, it just doesn't.
Even if you have a furnace that gets you into the heat pump range, it still doesn't work?
No, it's not that. It's that the efficiency of the heat pump goes down dramatically as the outside air temperature drops.
Right, but I mean, does it work off the outside temperature or the inside temperature is my question.
Well, it's the differential, okay?
I'm sorry, but if something brought the inside up to 35,
it still doesn't work.
Okay.
So there's two issues. One is that there's less heat to extract from the outside air, obviously, as the outside air gets colder, right?
Right.
The other problem is that the coil freezes.
Oh,
right. So what ends up happening when the coil freezes?
Well, that would be a problem.
Well, the unit goes into a reverse cycle. It shuts the fan off and runs the other direction to melt the ice, and then goes back on. The problem is it's taking energy out of the house to do that.
Okay.
So the melt cycles become an ever larger component of the total, and it just becomes uneconomic to run when you mine. And a lot of it also depends on the cost of power, okay? If your power cost is 12 cents a kilowatt hour like mine is, then your operating expense down to about 20, well, with gas where it is now, which is not based on the futures price because the utilities all forward buy, but what I'm paying per therm at present, and that does fluctuate a little bit from month to month, down to about 25, 26, the heat pump is cheaper. Below that, it's not.
Okay.
Now, if you don't have the gas, if you don't have dual fuel, and you trip onto heat strips, God help you. Because first off, well, not only is that insanely expensive because it's straight resistance heating, but the other problem is those strips, if you've got a 40 amp, basically 10,000 watt, 10 kilowatt is about the largest you can run because a 50 amp breaker is what they're on. That's only about 35,000 BTUs. the average gas furnace that's paired with a 3 to 5 ton AC system is 100,000.
I remember they used to have those things when we go skiing. Colorado didn't have gas. I mean, Steamboat didn't.
Right.
And everything was strips. And by the way, it was horrible heat. It was dry as hell. God help you if you put your boots next to the damn thing. And I think their electric bills in like the late 70s, early 80s was to the moon.
Oh yeah, and I mean, but not only that, but when this becomes the real problem is when it's, you know, when it's 5 degrees outside, right?
All right, hey, would you mind, we don't have that much time, give me the history of this MicroStrategy. What did they used to do, and how did they become a Bitcoin leverage joint?
So MicroStrategy is arguably the reason that the NASDAQ blew up in 2000.
Okay.
Never proved that they were the trigger. Okay, but the timing is absolutely spot on. They had just announced their earnings. They were spectacular. They were a company that tried to strategize business. I mean, it was as the name implies, right? They had announced earnings were spectacular. A few days later, they come out and do a restatement. Says, "Oh, by the way, there's some hinky shit in our numbers."
So they're a consulting firm.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
And so they come out and they do this restatement, and literally that was like the day the NASDAQ blew up in 2000. Okay, so whether they were actually the reason the pin got pulled in the grenade, or they were just the guys that made everybody wake up in a cold sweat thinking they were all going to go broke, who knows? But the, you know, like I said, the timing, you know, the correlation was there. So you have that. They kind of like puttered along. They survived the 2000 crash, but kind of sort of. And then this guy, their CEO, gets this brilliant idea that since Bitcoin is always going to go up and go to the moon, that they're going to buy it and basically become a trading vehicle for it and lever it. Okay, which is exactly what they did. Which worked really well when the price of Bitcoins was going up. In fact, it worked spectacularly well during that period of time.
Funny how that leverage works when it works.
It really is. You know, it's also funny. It's also funny, however, how you lose 80% of your value when the cost of Bitcoin goes down by 50%. Okay, I mean, isn't that amazing how the leverage?
Well, these guys are
directions.
Down from. Yesterday they were just going down all day, and we had some people that were speculating on the upside of the market, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm not giving any kind of investment advice to anybody, but until this thing turns around a little, I mean, these dudes were. They were 456 last July, and now they're 116 up today. So I mean,
well, like I said, I think they didn't they top at like 500 or something like that.
This year was 456, but it might have been before that. But now my question is the big thing, and we were trying to get to it a little bit with Kevin. You see, from these guys, which are obvious leverage bunches of people,
right,
to the 3 to 4 million that are lost, and maybe we're going to say maybe those people don't care, they don't even know, or they're dead. And we're going to have, you know, the machines. Who keeps track of all the machines in the low income neighborhoods where everybody's got, you know, $300-$400 in there adding up? Who keeps track of all this fractional crap? And I guess my saying is, what is my risk? When I say my risk, my client's risk, and I'll use the term regular stocks and the market. If next week, I mean, you know, I'm not predicting this. If because that's my job, is to worry, right? If Bitcoin's 20, Ethereum is half below, and MicroStrategy is trading 40, what does it do to my people that have Microsoft and IBM and gold and silver and all the other stuff that we have?
Well, that's precisely the problem, is that what ends up, you know, you've been around long enough to know what happens when people are out there on leverage and they get margin called. Okay.
Yep. Well, how pervasive is the market? I guess my question is, I can go to the FINRA. They won't tell me who they are, but I can see that the leverage in the stock market is incredible. It's a record beyond belief. It's like a trillion three or something.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that I can go to Coinbase or other places that, and they tell me how much they've levered on Bitcoin. I don't think this FINRA doesn't do that. I don't know if Coinbase is a FINRA place or not. I imagine they are, but I don't know. I mean, where can I get that? I tried finding it this morning. I can't find it.
There isn't a clean answer to the question. There just isn't. Because the problem with the chief is that so much of it isn't in there. So much of the leverage is in places like MicroStrategy.
But they borrow from somebody.
Well, I understand that, but
somebody? I mean, is it?
Well, that's external though to Bitcoin.
Well, okay, but I'm saying
the leverage is external.
If it's all in, I mean, I'm just pulling a name out of it. If the Denninger Bank has made a living the last 20 years of loaning money to Bitcoin, I think the Denninger Bank might have a problem. But I don't know who the bank is. I don't know if it's even a bank. Is it capital pools? Is it people? Kenny Pulcheri pointed, it's a long time ago, before COVID, I think. When this Bitcoin first started to do this, he told me that he was, I'll have to ask him on Tuesday, but something about, I think he did like a couple of $1,000 just to see how it worked.
Yeah,
I think he contributed to an outfit that loaned people money for Bitcoin. I think they were paying him 10% a year. It was a percent. Yeah. It might have been a percent and a half a month.
Yeah, it's the embedded leverage in this thing, because it is abstracted from the actual Bitcoin blockchain itself, is virtually impossible to get a good handle on. And that's one of the problems with it, is that when you saw the rotation, when you saw, okay, you see Bitcoin going down, and at the same time you see silver collapsing, right? Wait a minute, how can the two of those be connected?
Well, if it was going down, it might have caused the silver run up to a height that we knew was unsustainable.
And then it unwound, right?
So, but the thing didn't want to unwind, it cracked.
But that's the problem, is that how do I get my arms around the amount of leverage that's in these instruments? And the answer is, I don't think you can in the current context. But what I don't like, if you take a look at, for example, just on a market basis, you look at where CAPE is right now, okay, the adjusted, the cyclically adjusted PEs. And you take a look at that, and then you run a Monte Carlo analysis or just a straight out guess on where you're going to have for returns over the next, say, 3, 5, and 10 years. All right, we got a guy on my forum that put one of these things up, and he ran this on a Monte Carlo analysis. You do not want to know what it tells you. You really don't want to know, because what this basically says is that you are odds on to lose money, okay, over the next 3, 5, and 10 years. You're not in good shape there, and so basically you have a 50% chance of losing, of on a forward basis from today's prices. The really bad part is you have about a 10% chance of losing more than half.
Well, I mean, the math is, there's 19 million of these things out there. This is not including the leverage,
right?
Which is, that's the part that's the problem, probably.
Well, yeah.
But still, it's you've got 19 million bitcoins hanging out there.
Right.
$1,000 is, see, 190 is $19 billion.
Right.
Out of somebody's hide. Now, the question is, who? Is it somebody who has a bazillion dollars and is living in, Costa Rica or someplace? I guess that's not a problem. I mean, to me anyway, or to my clients. If it's somebody who went out on his credit cards and put an addition on his house because, oh, by the way, he had all this wealth, and now he doesn't.
Now it's gone.
I'm not trying to be sexist, but the wife might say, maybe we should sell that stuff and pay off the loan before it goes any lower. You might see some of that happening, right?
Yeah.
The question is, every person is a different spot. I mean, that's one thing I learned when I learned economics. Every person is an individual dollar vote. You can't just group everybody. Now that person isn't, quote, leveraged in the sense that he's got a borrowing on Bitcoin. He might have borrowing somewhere else based on his wealth in Bitcoin. Or he may not be leveraged at all. He might have put 20 grand in the damn thing 10 years ago, and now it's worth 180, and he's just sitting there going, well, I wish it was still 250. I mean, you might have nothing there. You also might have some firm that's lending money to Coinbase you never even heard of. And all of a sudden you go, who are those guys? Why are they broke? I mean, right? I mean, when this stuff happened in 2007, there were banks in Germany that I thought would never came close to something like this. And all of a sudden you find these guys with a bunch of mortgages. I mean, you never know. And you don't ever really want to find out, but then you do, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, and you take a look at, like, for example, you know, Amazon comes out with their numbers, right? And announces that they're going to be blowing $200 billion on AI this next year.
They're down 19 bucks, almost 9%.
And all of a sudden, 10% of their price gets whacked, right? Roughly.
Well, the idea that these price movements are 10 and 12% like every day, I was mentioning to Kevin, I don't think he thought it was a political statement. It wasn't. The Obama administration, what do we go, 9-10 months without a 1% move? Now we're seeing them in an hour.
Well, yeah, but again, you're
not saying it's because of Obama. I'm saying the difference right now, in my opinion, this is not healthy.
No, but the difference I don't think has anything to do with the political environment. I think it has to do with the fact that when Obama was in office, when he came into office, what was the PE of the market?
Well, it was a lot less.
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
Go figure. Now it's 40.
But I'm saying that the stability
on a cyclically adjusted basis.
But you didn't have, I walked down a political, you didn't have his people making incredible, maybe good ideas, bad ideas, lobbing stuff out every hour someplace that is all tradable.
Oh, okay, but when I've got five times the leverage in the system, I'm going to get five times the moves.
Well, without a doubt. I mean,
okay.
In other words, if ever was a time to not make a stupid statement, now might be it.
Well, okay, now you're asking politicians to not do stupid things.
But I'm saying the market is a little more vulnerable right now than normal.
Well, the market's a little more vulnerable because you had both the Biden and the Trump administrations before them, along with Obama, that played the stock market, the price of the stock market
is
a referendum on the economy, which it's not.
Well, since we have Bitcoin sort of in trouble, and we have all this leverage that you and I are talking about, having the Secretary of Treasury in front of Congress saying, well, yeah, we might decide to buy cryptos. Okay, that's not a statement that is an easy one now. It's like, what do you mean exactly? Duh, right?
Well, there was, there was this whole concern, and I think it's very real, is the idea that, that you move to digital currencies. Okay, that the central bank started issuing. This is basically the same thing as China's social credit scores. All right, because if I own the block, I can prevent you from transacting in it.
Well, I know there's some people who still think
that's a serious problem. All right, Chief. Now, if you all of a sudden can selectively censor somebody's ability to spend money, oh boy.
Well, but you also have. I mean, we've never seen, and, again, we've got to dash here anyway, but the idea that you have a president and his family in the Bitcoin business.
That doesn't work. DJT hasn't been working out so well lately.
Okay, but this Liberty Financial that he and the boys are on the board, they're still accepting money from foreign people. Now, whether the foreign people lose their money or not, I don't know how happy they are or unhappy about it. Maybe it's not their money. It's the country's money. But that's I don't think it's anything we've had to deal with ever that I know of. But
I don't know that that's necessarily not something we've had to deal with. It's just something that hasn't been as much as in your face.
Do you think Clinton, Obama, George Bush served on other boards when they were president?
No, but I think somebody's son served on an energy company.
Okay,
board.
But I mean, you can't even you're never going to get me to agree that was a good thing.
Oh, but it's, really?
But it's not, and I don't like the idea that Pelosi traded But what she did is chump change compared to what these guys are doing. It's not even close.
Well, but it's his family that's, I mean, he himself personally is not, I mean, you know, DJT is actually, I mean, if you want to look at it, it's run by Devin Nunes, for Christ's sakes. All right, now, that's about as corrupt as it gets, you want my opinion. But, you know, it's not actually Trump running it. And, yeah, it's his family members that are doing it, but that's the same thing that we've seen before from everybody else.
All right, you can't. I'm saying there's a matter of degree here.
Well, of course it's larger.
I'm not arguing against that, Chief. I mean, I have buddies at Notre Dame, and, you know, a couple of them sometimes seem to be lost in God knows where you'll say somebody's making, you know, $5 million to play quarterback, and he won't go to a classroom in his life. Yeah, but, you know, they used to give a guy, you know, $40 for the train ticket to go to his uncle's funeral in 1925, and I'm going, you're telling me that those are equivalent?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they are. I mean, what the old saw, you know, would you have sex with me for $3 million? Maybe. Would you have sex with me for $3? What do you think I am? We already know that. We're just negotiating price. I mean, there's a matter of degree here.
Well, yeah, it is. But, you know, again, how many times have I talked about the fact that exponential series always do this?
Yeah, I get it.
All right. So, am I surprised that this one's more exponential than the... No.
Are you... Do you got big money on the game?
No. I think this is going to be a very interesting... I think it'll be an interesting game, if nothing else. I'm more than a little surprised that you know, the Hawks didn't end up blowing themselves up with that little celebration tantrum that was... Yeah, I mean, that was a pivotal penalty. It could have cost them the Super Bowl. Didn't. But just by the skin of their teeth, right? I mean, they very nearly lost as a result of that. It didn't work out that way, but it could have. So we'll see. I mean, if it's a good contest, then I'll enjoy it. That's really all I want.
You know what I feel weird about is that, you know, I normally, just by watching the games and talking about them on Stocks and Jacks, I'll have seen the people in the Super Bowl like a bunch of times. But is it, I mean, New England's been crap for so long, and Seattle... Nobody seems to care about because it's Seattle. Right. I don't know. Were those guys, were any of them even on Monday or Sunday or Thursday night football?
They might have been a couple times, but
I get the feeling there are two teams I never even saw, except for the playoffs. And Seattle looks really good to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's like I said, I you know, that last the last playoff game there, I was actually somewhat impressed with the, you know, with the level of football that was being played.
I mean, you can't go week to week because people get hurt and all that stuff, but
right.
But San Francisco, I thought the Bears were pretty good. San Francisco destroyed the Bears.
Oh yeah,
and then they got deep pants by Seattle.
Yes, they did.
They didn't belong on the same field, so you can't normally do that in sports, you know, because people match up differently, but. You're tempted to say, boy, Seattle's got a really lot better than the Bears, right? I mean, that's your first instinct. Yep. Anyway, bud, have a nice weekend. Enjoy yourself. Are you going somewhere or are you drinking at home?
Actually, I am in Florida right now, but I'm headed back home today. So,
I mean, are you watching the game at home is my question.
Oh, yeah. No, I'll be back.
All right, so you're drinking at home in front of the TV.
I'm not sure exactly where I'll be drinking and in front of whose TV, but one way or another, yes, I will be drinking and I'll be in front of a TV.
Well, there you go. SP Futures up 40, NASDAQ Futures up 160. Let's hope we hang in there a little bit here. We don't need more destruction today. Back, Stocks and Jacks back on Monday.
That's all, folks.